Hi, this is Blake Morgan, and you're listening to Rod's Pulse Podcast.
Rod's Pulse Podcast number 62, Panopto, CourseCast, Podosphere News, and PodSafe Blake Morgan.
This is Rod's Pulse Podcast, the podcast for faculty and students interested in learning how to use and create podcasts and other e-learning technologies. Welcome back. This is Rod. Welcome back. That was a little teaser, a song by Blake Morgan called Danger to Wake You. I played a number of other Blake Morgan songs. I really like his voice. This one is an acoustic version I got off the PodSafe Music Network. And I have a link in my show notes to a little bit more about Blake Morgan. You can buy his new album, Burning Daylight, on Amazon. Blake's new solo album, Burning Daylight, is critically acclaimed, according to Amazon, and he did this in collaboration with 2005 Grammy Award winner Phil Niccolo. So stay tuned at the end of my podcast for the full song. Today I have for you a couple of quick news bits from the Podosphere, and then I have an interview with the CEO of Panopto, a company which is now marketing a CourseCast, which is a course capture system, similar in some respects to Appresso Classroom Integrity. You'll be hearing my full interview with Brad Winnie, CEO, shortly. But first, some news from the Podosphere. My first news bit is called YouTube for Documents. The title intrigued me. I saw that on Wired Campus News. It's about a new product called iPaper. It uses a flash-based document reader, which you can embed into a web page. The software makes it easy to search within a large document and email the results to a friend. The intriguing thing that I saw was that it also translates the text to audio. I imagine this would be very handy for those who just want to sit back and listen. Otherwise, it doesn't seem to be very much different than having a PDF file, except that it's easy to embed it into a web page. In my show notes, I give a link to the article and to the application. The sample document that I highlighted for you to look at is the EDUCAUSE report about the future of technology at colleges. And I've talked about that report in the past, so it's another good opportunity to mention it again and have you take a look at that report. The report is the Horizon Report, 2007 edition. It's a collaboration between the New Media Consortium and the EDUCAUSE Learning Initiative. The nice thing about using this product is that in true social networking fashion, it allows you to make a comment, rate the article, and allows you to publish your own documents. You can upload your own document and distribute it on the web that way. And like I said, you can actually listen to the paper, but be aware there's no easy way that I could see to navigate through. So you have to listen to it from beginning to end, which may not be too practical. That'd be one feature be great for them to fix. My second bit of news from the Podosphere, I think, is of special interest to students. The article title certainly intrigued me, 100 Ways to Use Your iPod to Learn and Study Better. And as the article mentions, it literally lists 100 different ways to use your iPod. They list a number of study guides, Spark Notes, Raybook, Notepods, all designed for the iPod. There's about 10 of those. There's about 15 podcasts that be useful for students, Pod City Guides, iPod Spanish to Go, BrainQuest, Stedman's Medical Technology flashcards. They list a number of tutorials, Kaplan SAT prep, and then a number of applications. I'd like to spend some time on this and maybe pick out some to share with you next time. iPod Sync, iGadget, whatever that is. Anyway, it's really a neat article that really brings a lot of resources together in one spot. So, as usual, I'll have the link to that resource in my show notes. Now for my main section today, I like to report on CourseCast. It's a product by a new company, Panopto, and I'll be talking to the CEO, Brad Winnie. As you know, I've been talking about class capture, especially in terms of being able to subscribe to the podcast of your class at Thomas Jefferson University. We use Espresso Classroom. By the way, they've changed their name to Echo 360, and I'll be speaking to their CEO in the near future. Also, I've mentioned another product called Tegrity. This product, however, CourseCast, is going to be especially interesting to colleges and universities because they have embarked on what they call their Socrates Project, which actually gives the software free of charge to colleges and universities. So that's pretty exciting. Their business model eventually is to market their product as a way to capture knowledge in businesses. So that's apparently how they're going to make their money. And in the meantime, colleges and universities can take advantage of it. So without further ado, let me play the recording of my interview with Brad Winnie. I apologize for the quality. It was recorded over the phone. Hope you'll forgive that. And but enjoy.
Brad, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. And I am excited about learning about a new class capture product. Forget exactly how I found out about your course capture product. Could you tell me a little bit about it?
Sure, Rodney, and thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and your audience. First of all, just backing things up a little bit to tell you a little bit of history about the company. We as a company were formed out of Carnegie Mellon University. We were the product of a couple of years' worth of research into various types of lecture capture optimization, if you will. And the School of Computer Science had this project going on for the better part of almost 3 years now. From an architectural standpoint, they believed they had a superior offering. And then from a market standpoint, I think everyone was realizing that lecture capture as a convention, if you will, for increasing student outcomes and increasing the student experience within higher education was something that was commercially viable. And so Carnegie Mellon has a fairly mature technology transfer process by which they help businesses get up and running based on technology that was spawned out of Carnegie Mellon University.
Uh-huh. So I imagine that it's used at Carnegie Mellon. Mm-hmm. Where do you have any other customers right now?
Well, there's a couple things. Yes, we have the nearest customer is actually University of Pittsburgh. They are physically right next to Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh, and they are using it in several departments. And some of that's just obviously the result of being physically so proximate. But they became significant users of the product in the latter half of 2007 and are using it quite aggressively. The University of Pittsburgh Medical Center is another institution that is part of the Pittsburgh Mafia, for lack of a better expression, and they too are using the product. Their Institute of Clinical Research has been using it for the better part of 6 months. So there's a lot of local groundswell in using it. But perhaps more importantly, ever since we announced the Socrates Project, which we did in December, we've had over a couple of hundred enrollments in the program, at least inquiries in the program, I should probably say more accurately. And we have about, I would say, 30 prospective universities and community colleges and K-12 districts that are going to be coming online in the next 60 days.
Wow. Maybe you better explain to my audience what the Socrates Project is all about.
Sure. We'll be glad to. The essence of the Socrates Project was driven by a couple of philosophical preconditions, one of which was that being that we're from academia, we certainly felt like there was a desire to give back to academia in some meaningful way. So we're obviously, as a technology, we're the beneficiary of research within Carnegie Mellon, and some of that research was obviously just part of the foundation of the institution itself that we benefited from. So we had this altruistic notion that we wanted to give back. We believe in what we're doing as something that benefits the educational cause at a greater level. So that was one philosophical dimension of this. The second, though, is there is a non-altruistic driver behind this, and that is that we certainly believe that the money to be made in lecture capture is, to some degree, in the education market, but we believe it's in large part in the corporate market. And specifically, we believe that there's a strong correlation between what we call lecture capture in academia and what the commercial world would call knowledge capture or knowledge management.
Uh-huh.
And so many of the constructs associated with capturing lectures and making those lectures available online, and more importantly, making them integrated into kind of into the workflow, if you will, is something that we certainly plan on taking advantage of in the corporate marketplace. And so the Socrates agreement really is, as I've described it before, it's this intellectual property co-op, if you will, where we collectively, through the eyes and experiences of the Socrates project members, build a better product, which we ultimately take to the corporate marketplace.
I see. So is it like a beta system where you get feedback from the beta users to produce a new or better product?
Yeah, you know, there's a beta component to it. I mean, it's like beta in that it is free. The software as a deliverable is free now and always will be. Certainly, institutions are going to be encouraged to give us beta feedback on the product.
Sure.
To give us, you know, not only the good but the bad and the ugly. Tell us, you know, where it works well, where it doesn't work well, what's missing, what's not missing. And we just think that it's, you know, in our experiences with Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh, we get just invaluable best practices, if you will, on how to build a better system. But it is, I would tell you, a commercial-grade product, meaning that the variance between what we consider, what we call CourseCast for the academic market, and what we are going to be offering to the corporate market are going to be, by and large, dependent on the same code base. So there's going to be a mission-critical quality to it, or an industrial strength quality to it, that we're going to always have as part of commercial the product.
Just to step back one second, I think much of my audience are faculty, and can you explain to them what CourseCast does? I know it captures the course, but is it video, just audio? What's on the lectern PC screen? And you have different options. Is it automated? That sort of thing.
Essentially, CourseCast is a fully featured lecture capture system that is, first and foremost, assuming that they're capturing lectures, in a typical classroom setting, or, for example, in an offline setting, perhaps an adjunct professor is teaching a class in his or her own office. But most of the constructs that this industry is familiar with, whether or not it's with a Sonic Foundry system or Tegrity or any stream product, it's pretty much the same thing in that there's typically one or more cameras in the back of the room, and there is usually a PowerPoint or a whiteboard or some kind of document camera being used as part of the teaching format, and the recording of all that happens fairly automatically, and then it gets streamed and encoded automatically. So our product concerns itself with compressing that whole process in such a way that it's highly intuitive, user-friendly, and not only scales real well, but scales on an economic basis as well, meaning that you can go way beyond simply just 5 to 10 classrooms, but actually deploy this in a campus-wide environment. And the reason why we get away with that is that we are primarily a software-based solution, and we interleave within that a lot of web-based componentry. We don't have any dependencies on any physical devices in the sense that there's only one device to edit from or one device to record from. It's all very flexible, very organic in its structure.
Okay, that's a good lead into my next question, really, which has to do with how you distinguish yourself from some of your competition. I know in the past in my podcast I've interviewed some of the managers behind Appresso and also Tegrity.
Right.
How do you distinguish your product from their products?
Well, I think everybody in the business does something very well, and I think so. I will leave it at that and say that that is my sense that you know, all those guys are doing something in a way that I think makes them unique in the marketplace. I think our uniqueness is driven on a couple of levels. One of which is, in fact, this notion that we are a software-based product and that we don't necessarily depend on anything proprietary in our framework. So everything that every physical element that our software touches, every physical device, is typically off-the-shelf commodity hardware that you can go down the street at Best Buy and go purchase to use. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's one facet that is perhaps somewhat unique. A second area, and this is perhaps a much deeper technical conversation waiting to happen, but I'll throw it out there nonetheless, and that is that our system is really a confluence of many different streams. We treat everything as an independent stream, and so one of the benefits of doing that is that we can amalgamate, if you will, any number of streams across any number of systems. And this gives, I think, educators who either have or are anticipating larger scale deployments a real, real flexibility to go beyond, again, simply the five classrooms that have all of the toys in it, and then the rest of the classrooms have none. This system mm-hmm. is a very lightweight system to incorporate on a broad basis, yet it scales up quite nicely using fairly conventional equipment.
I see.
So I think there's, and the secret to all that, and I don't mind saying this because it's on our website, but the secret to all that is that we've distributed the streams, and we've broken everything up into these independent streams, and that allows everything to scale quite nicely.
Okay.
And then we have some features that I think kind of proclaim this, or at least show, point to a window to our soul from a technology level, and I think one of which is, you know, we can take notes, for example. Any student who watches a playback can take notes anywhere that they have a browser. So whenever they watch the playback, they can actually take their notes. And in and of itself, that may or may not be all that unique, but the fact that it can happen anywhere, anytime, and not with any specific type of equipment is an important component.
If I understand you, are you saying that they go to a website, they're playing back the class session, and there's a way for them to add their notes right into that and link it to their own?
They add those notes, and those notes, in fact, are searchable.
So that's
good for one student, it's good for 100 students.
That's great. One thing that I know at Thomas Jefferson University, we have Espresso installed and some other schools in the area. One of the drawbacks, at least that I've heard from faculty, is that there's no way for them to edit the final file. Is there a way to go in there, let's say, you know, there's a big chunk of dead space or something, is it easy enough to go back to edit and cut out pieces?
Sure, yeah. Well, that was going to be the kind of another characteristic that I think is pretty good evidence of the way that we've approached this problem set. And the answer is yes. You can very quickly and easily edit from essentially from anywhere. We have an applet that you would use on any kind of system, and it communicates over the internet to a specific to your data server, for example. And you can very quickly cut out your 5 to 10 minutes of dead space. You can cut out the bad joke that went the wrong way. Or more importantly, you can actually create as many different derivative edits. And the reason why that's important is you can take, for example, a two-hour session, and you can chunk that up into 10-minute intervals and then interlace that with interactive curriculum. And the beauty of all that is that you've never, ever damaged the original file. You can do that as many times as you like.
I see. Yeah, that's a very attractive feature from my standpoint. I know we've talked in educational technology for a long time of having a way to really modularize these kinds of media files so that you can repurpose them and use them in different ways. Do you have a way to then to tag these chunks so that you can pull them up by different keywords?
Yes, the tagging mechanism is perhaps, it goes back to that the content itself is searchable.
Uh-huh.
So let's say you take a two-hour presentation and you've been PowerPointing all throughout that presentation, and then you want to break it down into, say, microbiology and botany and statistics. And let's say you've been talking about all those three sections in that two-hour mm-hmm. presentation. I can't imagine what that presentation would be like through it. But nonetheless, if you were to break it down into its microbiology, botany, and statistics constituents, you would have essentially the metadata describing those classes or those sessions separately, and then all the content within those sessions.
I see. That's great. Yeah. Is there a way to interface your product with class scheduling systems such as Banner or Blackboard?
Yeah, it is a very manual way of doing it right now. You know, once the recording process has started, we really manage the entire process through Fruition. If you don't want to edit, it's essentially record and go. And what happens at the end of that workflow is that a link gets produced. And that link then simply you just cut and paste in whatever LMS that you'd like. The next step that we have is we will certainly be building things like a Blackboard building block and various other integrations.
Yeah.
Because we understand that, you know, that's just that last mile or that last step that people, you know, would prefer not to take.
Right, that's right. So. Yeah, I understand. Well, if there's anything coming up in the future, anything exciting happening that you want to talk about for the future product?
I can preview with you that one of the things that we are going to include is everything in our system that presumes a video stream at this point. And we're going to break that dependency, if you will, so
uh-huh.
that you can actually mix and match any form of content, whether or not it's, you know, audio only in PowerPoint or audio only in screen capture to full blown video screen capture in PowerPoint. Any mix of those is the system's going to be quite a bit more flexible in that regard, and that will help, I think, for those institutions that, you know, want video at some level, but they also simply want the lighter weight capture capability, and that's
right. Yeah, at Jefferson, for example, we don't capture a video of it at all. It's really just the audio and the mostly their PowerPoints. So,
and I'll be the first to admit that I think video sometimes is overkill. I think it does add value by and large across the board, but sometimes it's just not necessary. So,
right. In your experience, institutions that do use the video, do they then have to employ a dedicated cameraman to make sure everything goes into place,
well,
or do they pretty much capture it on?
Well, it ranges. I think on one level, you have some institutions that have fixed cameras, so they get around the videographer dependency by just having fixed cameras with high resolution, and that generally does a pretty good job. Obviously, there are some very sophisticated institutions in the sense that they have tracking cameras and things like that. But that's, you know, as much as those are, those don't scale all that well. So I think what you're going to see happen is more and more of the wall-mounted cameras with high-resolution, high-definition cameras in which you can essentially crop what you want in and what you want out. I think that's going to be one, that'll be one mechanism. But to your question, yes, there's a varying range of either on-campus videographer services that are used by various institutions, you know, that they offer to their sundry departments within a campus. Or a lot of schools actually will just co-op or deputize students on a summer jobs program or just
sure.
on a jobs program basis. And that actually is fairly effective because the videography content and the quality of that content is important in terms of the production value.
Exactly.
But the essence of it is essentially, you know, pointing a camera, making sure the camera stays on target. I
sure.
think the audio piece is as important as the video piece by and large. Mm-hmm. But what we've seen so far in some of these institutions is the student population can handle that pretty well. Once they get up and running, they're in pretty good shape and they enjoy it.
Well, listen, Brad, I want to thank you so much for taking the time. Learned a lot about your product, and it sounds exciting, and certainly free is good in the educational institutions. So I wish you the best of luck with your product. Thank you again.
Well, Rodney, I appreciate it very much. And as usual, if you have any more questions or follow-up, please let me know, okay?
Okay, that's the interview with Brad. I'll have the links to his company, Panopto, on my show notes. Now, don't forget to stay tuned to the full song, Danger to Wake You by Blake Morgan. Until next time, have a great week.
Please leave odd feedback at 610-616-2199.
Yourself, you're not yourself, you're not yourself, so who are you? It can't be helped, it can't be helped, it can't be helped what you go through. And stranger than fiction, it's a dangerous addiction, and stranger. You're something else. You're something else. You're something else. So what are you? It can't be helped. It can't be helped. It can't be helped what you go through. And stranger than fiction, it's a dangerous addiction. And stranger than true, it's a danger to wake you. Danger.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Please don't forget to leave Rod feedback. You can go to www.rodspulsepodcast.com and leave comments on his blog. You can send feedback to his email address, rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. You can also send audio feedback by calling into his comment line at 610-616-2199. Till next time, have a great week.
The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Merry, and does not represent the official viewpoint of Thomas Jefferson University, or any other institution or company.